You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks, she had a pet snake, she bought a red guitar.
This episode is brought to you by our patron, Kathy Ferguson, professor of political theory in Star Trek.
Welcome back to the Mythgreen Podcast. I'm Chris, and with me is...
Wes.
And...
Oren.
And today we are talking about food.
In particular, food.
Candy and spinach, and how your characters should always sit down at the table and just eat lots and lots of them for every story.
But, like, spinach doesn't taste very good, Chris. It's kind of bitter, and, like, I like candy, so I'm just gonna eat a big bowl of, like, gumdrops, and that'll be fine.
I disagree. Right? I think that you should only have spinach all the time.
Wait, what? Yes. Okay, this bit has gotten really weird.
Well, I will say that what will happen, Oren, is that you'll have a lot of fun, but you'll get pretty sick in the end, whereas Wes won't have much fun, but he will be healthy.
Yeah, but I might be a little, like, sadder about things. Who knows?
But you might be kind of sad. Okay. Now that we've given ourselves an award for taking analogy way too far.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what we actually mean. So recently we had a comic on the site that was talking about why we shouldn't use the term Mary Sue. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I did have that comic, yes.
Yeah.
It's very pretty.
Yeah. And so we had, you know, people protesting that, like, hey, but Mary Sue is such, like, a useful storytelling term. And, like, you know, it does have its utility, but it just has way too much baggage. It just has too much. The association with, like, looking down on women is just too strong. It also has this connotation that comes from fan fiction of being about self-insert characters. And, you know, I'm really tired of seeing people look at characters and compare them to the author profile and try to guess as to whether that character is a self-insert, because it just doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it does not.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if a character is over-glorified, that's a problem of itself. It has nothing to do with self-insert. Even if they're correlated, it doesn't matter. So talking about what terms we can use instead... And then Mythgreens does have a couple of terms which, you know, I thought we could go into that I think ultimately are much more useful.
Yeah.
And allow a lot more nuance and allow us to kind of express these concepts a lot better. And they are candy and spinach.
Right. And before we go any further, I do just want to say for the record, because there's a lot of confusion about this every time we bring up the question of using Mary Sue or any other gendered slur, is... not using it, we're not claiming that it will get rid of sexism in the same way that not using words like bitch will not erase sexism, and not using racial slurs doesn't erase racism. But those words are inherently gendered or racialized or whatever they are, and so not using them and using something else that's more neutral does help level the playing field a little bit. All right, that's my soapbox. I'm off of it. Chris, why don't you tell us about these terms?
Okay. So, candy is any element in a story that glorifies a character. You know, it means they look cool, they're super badass, you know, other characters praise them. And you can think of a character that would be normally be called a Mary Sue as being a character that is candied, very over-candied. Mm-hmm. But it's also useful because then we can talk about actual events in the story that create that effect, right? And... one of my favorite examples is, so Firefly, I love Firefly, but it has this mm-hmm. one scene that I cringe at every time because it is just so much candy and it feels contrived and ridiculous. It's the scene where, Inara is talking to Shepherd Book mm-hmm. and they're talking about mail and they're like, why are you so fascinated? They're fascinated by him. And Inara's like, oh, I guess he's, you know, somewhat of a mystery, you know? It's just really, like, so few men are mysterious, but Mal is so mysterious. And
yep.
Right? And, you know, that might not be considered a trait about Mal. I wouldn't say that Malcolm Reynolds in general is an overcandid character, but that is just too much. It is just too much.
He's not particularly mysterious either, right? He's, like, I would describe Mal a lot of ways. I would never describe him as mysterious.
Yeah, yeah, he's stubborn and withholding.
like Shepherd Book is mysterious. Mal is not.
But then on the other side of the coin, we have Spinach, which is the opposite. And Spinach does not get talked about enough. It really does not.
Right.
It kind of, when it is talked about, it's talked about in kind of very vague terms, like, hey, make your characters go through troubled times, etc. But Spinach is things that humiliate a character. Again, it's not just like the character being unhappy. It's the opposite of glorification. So if they can't do anything right, you know, if they embarrass themselves in front of people, if no one likes them, you know, if they don't look good, if they're not attractive, mm-hmm. you know, to love interests, that kind of thing, that would be considered Spinach.
Can I interject here, Chris?
Yeah, go ahead.
So you said anything that would humiliate them. I'm curious if it's Spinach, could we say something happens that humbles them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes. Just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, no, that's better terminology. yeah, something that humbles them, that kind of takes them down a notch. Right. Mm-hmm. And as we were talking about with the eating food analogy, the idea is that candy is fun, okay? But it's fun for people who already are really attached to that character, who already love that character. It doesn't get people attached to a character, right? Not unless they strongly identify with that character, which, you know, we talked about Wishful from a while ago, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whereas it's more likely to push them away. Whereas Spinach, it does the opposite. It's not fun, but it does get people to like the character.
Mm-hmm.
It gets people love underdogs, people who go through hard times, you know, who have humility, they are more sympathetic. And so we have the effect of, like, Spinach bonds you to the character, and then once you're bonded to the character, candy gives you enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, different kinds of characters, I think, generally, like, want different ratios of candy and spinach. And there's, like, there's sort of two dimensions to this, right? There's the prejudice discrimination angle where, like, female characters will always be judged more harshly for having candy than male characters, right? And that's, or at least they will right now, hopefully not always.
Mm-hmm.
But if you dig beyond that, if you dig further in general, protagonists need more spinach than villains. Like giving your villain a lot of spinach is a good way for them to just become, like, not interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're building them towards a redemption arc, and that's basically what happens with Kylo Ren, mm-hmm. is that he gets nothing but spinach, and he's just not a very good villain. He's just not threatening.
Yeah.
But anyway. But then, like, characters, like, wish fulfillment, or not wish fulfillment, but, like, blank characters can generally get, make do with more candy because they are, like, where the audience can insert themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because, like, the audience is supposed to, like, and that's why blank characters are, like, you know, generally have, like, a couple of vaguely positive traits, like being brave and clever.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and so, like, you know, you want to give them a little more candy than a protagonist who has their own personality, because then, like, whenever you give them spinach, then, like, the audience feels like they're getting spinach because they are, like, living through that character, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Although I should still point out that even, like, blank characters who are popular still usually start out with a fair amount of spinach, you know?
This is true.
Like, even Harry Potter, for instance, you know, we know that he's, like, the chosen one in the beginning, and that is a significant amount of candy, but then we have to, you know, go through and watch him be mistreated for a while before he's able mm-hmm. to capitalize on that in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that certainly when we stay within, like, wish fulfillment parameters, when we want a character that one audience group really identifies with strongly, they can also get, you know, more candy. Oh, and related, this is interesting. Second person protagonists, I think you can give them more candy.
Mm-hmm.
Because the second person, once again, puts the reader farther into their shoes. It makes it more feel like it's you the story is about.
Yeah.
You can actually give them more candy than you would if you were writing in third person.
So here's a question, Chris. I've always had a little bit of trouble with this one. One of the examples that you often give of spinach is Harry Potter, where he has, like, his interactions with the Dursleys, and they, like, you know, tell him that he's worthless and such. I feel like there is also a kind of interaction that a character can have where everyone else, like, disagrees with them that can be candied, where it's supposed to make them, like, you know, be like everyone else is telling them that they're wrong, but they're right anyway, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's not really clear to me where that line is. Like, at what point is the character becoming, like, a Christ figure where everyone is, like, hating on them, but they're so cool because, like, they're the only one who knows. And, like, when is it, like, actual, like, humbling when they're told that they're wrong by other people?
I mean, I would say one of the biggest things to start with, you know, like, Candy and Spinach, like, had different balances throughout the story. And I think that to start with, I would actually look at whether that character is in a position of power. Mm-hmm. Because when I've seen it done where it feels like it's for the glorification of a character, it's been like Captain Janeway, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's in charge. Other people can doubt her as much as they want, but she can do whatever she wants to, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And whereas, like, Harry is in a position of he's very vulnerable. You know, he's a kid. He's completely at the mercy of, you know, his foster parents. So I feel like that's different. And then I think, you know, certainly how some of this is very subtle and how it's portrayed at the end, you know, like when the character, when the character finally is shown to be right at the end of the story, what do the other characters do? Right? Do they grovel? Do they, like, oh my god, you're so right all along. I'm sorry for not believing you. I will never waver again. You have my undying loyalty.
yeah.
Right? Because when you have that kind of, you know, when you have that happen, you get the feeling that the setup was just there to give them that moment of huge candy, you know? And in fact, that's why some characters, it's very strange, but some, you know, characters die for the sake of getting more candy. Because then we have an excuse to hold, like, a big funeral where everybody talks about them and praises them and be like, this person sacrificed themselves for us all, and, you know.
We're just subtweeting Voyager here, okay? I don't know if you guys have seen Voyager, there are very specific episodes that Chris is alluding to here.
But anyway, so...
Although I should point out that this stuff all happens with John Sheridan in Babylon 5, too.
Oh gosh,
like everything
Sheridan
we've just described,
worst. he has so much candy.
Everything we've just described about Janeway can be applied to Sheridan, including him dying so everyone can talk about how cool he is and how bad it is that he's gone now.
the dying thing, if that happens in Voyager, I don't remember it. I wasn't actually thinking about Voyager in that one.
There's an episode of Voyager where Janeway thinks that she's dead, and she's actually being attacked by a mind alien, but whatever. She thinks she's dead, and there's a scene where all of the crew are giving, really teary eulogies about how awesome Janeway was, and you could choose to read that as Janeway's extreme narcissism, because this is all happening in her head, but there's certainly no indication in the episode that that's not what they would actually say, right?
Mm-hmm. Analysis of stories gets fuzzy when you have something that, like, turns out it was actually not real the whole time. But I think in most cases, the writers are still intending for that scene to be perceived as real by the audience. Yeah. And so I would just, you know, for analysis sake, treat it as though it's actually in a real event.
Yeah, if the writers don't want it to be read as real, they have to give some implication of it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it just looks like, this just looks real to me. Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that's interesting that is not, you know, I like the using the words candy and spinach, because I think that gives you a lot of opportunities for creative wordplay and also gives you some idea of what they do. But one thing that does not map up to real life is I think that you can, again, get away with more candy if you also have more spinach, right?
Is that way? Is that not how real life works? I thought if I ate enough vegetables, it was okay to eat lots of pizza. What? Oh no.
And I haven't taken a strong look at stories that have lots of spinach and lots of candy compared to stories that have low of both. I would think that, though, having more of both is probably a little bit more gripping and engaging. If nothing else, then mm-hmm. we have a lot of sort of back and forth. And certainly Harry Potter is a good example of, I think, a high amount of both.
Yes.
Rowling really, really, like, plays them off of each other quite strongly all the time. With Harry, like, first being, like, the famous, you know, boy who's adored by everybody. And then, like, the next moment, everyone hates him.
Mm-hmm.
Does this all the time.
Yeah, although, and I think that I do agree with you in general, that is a true thing. I do think that you, like with most things, if you take it too far, the story will start to feel discordant.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just switching back and forth too quickly. And I actually have felt that in Harry Potter sometimes, where it feels like Harry sometimes goes from being like the famously adored slayer of He Who Must Not Be Named to like that weirdo that everyone doesn't like really quickly. And it's not that public opinion can't change quickly. It just sometimes it feels very jarring. It's like, wait, do they like him now? Or I honestly don't remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not usually a problem. Rowling is usually pretty good at that, but it like I can imagine that being more of an issue in another story. I can't think of an example off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. Well, it probably also doesn't help that it's the same group of people for the most part, right?
Whereas yeah, that's true.
The way that Rowling does it otherwise is like, you know, for instance, Harry is really good at Quidditch. That is the mm-hmm. one place in Harry Potter bit. Where he definitely has too much candy. And, like, the game is built to give him more candy. Like, the game, the way that she made the rules. I mean, it definitely helps, though, that he's not, at the beginning, he's not good at anything else, right? He's just good at Quidditch. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if she just goes back and forth between focusing on Quidditch and focusing on a, like, potions or something where he's struggling, right, then that might feel more natural than having the same group of people suddenly like him and hate him back and forth. But certainly it is, again, I will say that having more spinach does, I think, make candy, you know, more enjoyable when you get the payoff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going through Harry Potter 5 right now, where Harry Potter just does not do well in book 5. And maybe this should have happened at the end of book 5 and not in book 6. But at the same time, I feel like one of the reasons why book 6 is one of my favorite Harry Potter books is because after having Harry be, like, super emo and struggling so much in book 5, seeing him come into his own in book 6 is just super satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's worth noting, I think, that, like, the Harry Potter Quidditch stuff, I just completely tune it out. Every time Harry Potter plays Quidditch, I'm just like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'm just going to skip to the end and see if this is the one where he gets attacked by a monster. But I actually, even though on this second read-through, I really don't like Ron. Even though, like, Ron is just a jerk. I am still way more invested in the scenes where Ron plays Quidditch than where Harry does, because Ron is not amazing at it, and he's trying really hard, and he has, like, these emotional stakes of, like, you know, living in his friend's shadow, who's way better at Quidditch than he is, and, like, this family tradition he needs to uphold, and I just, like, that is way more interesting, because he has that spinach, and then, like, I actually feel good when he does mm-hmm. well in Quidditch, mm-hmm. whereas when Harry does this, it's like, yeah, of course Harry did well at Quidditch, whatever, it's fine, moving on. It's like, I would skip the Quidditch matches if I could, if there was an easy way to do that.
Yeah, but anyway, so there's, of course, we don't have to use just Harry Potter in this example. There's a whole bunch of other
things. Are
characters.
You sure? Because
I feel like every podcast ends up being Harry Potter time.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you're doing your reread of Harry Potter. You want to talk about it. But okay. So let's reach outside of Harry Potter for a minute. There are lots and lots of examples of characters with too much candy. It's actually a pretty normal, like, author mistake, especially for newer authors, although not exclusively. It's very normal that authors will give their characters too much candy because they like the character, they want the character to be cool, And, like, at first, all of their readers respond well to the character being cool, so they figured, you know, can't have too much of a good thing, right? So that's all over the place. But it's rarer, but potentially just as bad, for a character to have too much spinach. And when that happens, you get a character who's just, like, not fun to watch or read about. They're just, like, you kind of feel bad for them, but, like, in a way that you wish they would go be sad somewhere else. And I feel that way about characters like Harry Kim in Voyager, where, like, he gets nothing to do. On the rare instances where he tries to do anything, he just fails and is humiliated and is the only Star Trek character ever to be, like, berated for having an alien lover. It's just bad. I'm just like, oh gosh, I don't want to see Harry Kim fail more. And same thing with Dawn from Buffy, right? Like, Buffy even made a joke about it in season 6 where they were like, Dawn's in trouble, must be Tuesday, right? But, like, you know, like many other stories, lampshading doesn't fix the problem, where it's just like, okay, well, this character is just kind of pathetic, and they're either obnoxious and I don't want to watch them for that reason, or I just, like, I'm just tired of seeing them fail and I want them to succeed at something. And that's what happens when you get too much spinach. And it's a little bit harder to ascertain, like, why characters with too much spinach have too much spinach. I think sometimes it's because authors have a good instinct that they need to give their character spinach, but then they go too far with it. In the case of Voyager, I think it might just have been because Rick Berman didn't like Harry Kim's actor. Don't know that for sure, just a theory. So that can happen, and the consequences are pretty bad.
Yeah, it is certainly less likely, I think, with the central character, right? I think the one time I've seen it is, I'm pretty sure you have read this series, or one of them, or in the Assassin's Apprentice.
Yeah, I read the first one.
Yeah, where the main character, he just, like, supposedly he's okay, but, like, every time he tries to do anything, he fails. He just messes up. And it's like, I feel like I stuck around and read the entire series just, like, hoping at some point that he would come into his own. Because, again, spinach does help you bond to a character and helps you, like, want them to succeed, right? And it means that if you build up a lot of spinach, that candy's, like, a higher payoff. But, like, if the candy never comes, you know, it's very, very unsatisfying. And he never shines in that series, I don't think.
No, that was definitely a problem with Fitz and was weird is that, like, when you describe Fitz in a vacuum, he sounds like an over-candied protagonist, because he has, like, he's an assassin, like, trained by, like, the master assassin, and he has two kinds of magic, and he, like, knows all these poison techniques, and he's just so cool. But then when you actually read the book, he's like, he never succeeds at anything. And, like, I think the other problem with Fitz is, frankly, that his motivation is weak. A lot of the conflict that's happening is, like, high-level political conflict, like, way above anything he knows anything about. But he definitely suffers from having too much spinach. And that's one of the reasons why I did not read any more of those books, because I was just, by the end of it, I was just kind of like, I don't want to read more of this character. He's just kind of exhausting.
A lot of the talk about, like, giving spinach to these characters, I'm trying to think of more instances where there's over-spinached characters in stories, and I guess I want to test the definition of spinach a little bit, because I was thinking about, let's maybe try to focus on Fellowship of the Ring. Like, you know, just so many bad things happened to them throughout that first book, and it's not that, like, they're trying and failing, but, like, they're increasingly realizing that they might be on a hopeless mission. And is that spinach?
So I tend to think of Candy and spinach as being attached to particular characters and how that character is seen, how cool they are. And so certainly Lord of the Rings is just depressing. It goes on a long time. It definitely feels hopeless. But I think the big question is, do you come out of it with the sense that some of these characters are just failures as people?
That's a good clarification. That's a really good clarification.
Yeah. So because you can have, like, I think, for instance, Buffy is over candied a little bit, you know, not too bad. I've definitely seen worse, but she mm-hmm. is, but there are certain points in during the series of Buffy the Vampire Slayer where she is just dragged through some terrible stuff and she's really unhappy. But she's not actually given spinach, I think. The thing, and I feel like spinach, you need spinach to correct candy, and if you just make a candy protagonist unhappy, but you don't correct the fact that they're, like, the story is just overinflated their ego, you know? If none of the hardship that happens to them is any way their fault, you know, then that's when, like, I don't think it really corrects the problem.
Right, okay.
So whereas if they go through lots of hardship and they are somehow responsible for it, you know, they're just not good enough. It feels that way. Then what you've got is spinach.
Yeah, and I do think there is some spinach in The Lord of the Rings, and at least from the movies, that they do a pretty good job of balancing it. Like, if nothing else, Frodo, for example, like all the hobbits at the beginning get some spinach in that they really have no idea what they're doing. Yeah. Right, they're all a bunch of noobs, and they like they want, you know, they're all level one commoners, and they like wander around like not really sure what to do, and like trying not to get in the way when Aragorn is doing stuff, and then like even so, like Frodo, like they still I think manage at one point to signal the Nazgûld, right, by like I think it was by lighting a fire, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I think it's Pip. Pip is the one that gets tons of spinach. Because he's the one who actually messes everything up, right? It's not that they're going for hardships. The hardships are his fault. Like, I think it's him and Mary, I think, that light the fire. They do it together. That mm-hmm. causes trouble. And then he is the one who calls attention to all of, like, the goblins, at least in the movies. I'm trying to remember if he actually... Yeah. I think he does something like that, too, in the books. Where they're in Moria.
Yeah.
And he, like, plays with a thing and it falls down the well and it causes tons of noise and brings more trouble on them. And then he, like... Later, he, like, steals the, like, eye, the magic eye that that Sauron can see from. And
very, very handy magic
and
eye.
And once again, calls attention to himself, makes more trouble. Then they go to, what's that big human city? Why can't I remember the name?
Minas Tirith?
Yeah, they go to Minas Tirith, and he, like, spontaneously, like, vows himself to this regent guy who's just not a good person.
No.
And, like... And Gandalf is like, what are you doing? I didn't tell you to do that. Why did you do that? At one point at the end, he does help, like, save Faramir. But, like, I'm not sure he ever actually, like, you know.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've read the books. But I do remember, like, a lot of that still kind of happens with Merry and Pippin. But I do remember by the end of the series... They get very candied up. And that's because they end up like drinking the Entwash and they grow and they're like bigger than normal hobbits. And then like they like ride back into the Shire on like big ponies with like treasure and cool clothes and stuff. And everybody's like, whoa, you guys are huge.
Yeah, I think in fact, even in Minas Tirith, I think once he vows himself and becomes a guard, like the Tolkien narrates how like there's rumors that he's not just like some hobbit, but like a hobbit prince. So people like think he's a prince. And then he's very refined because he has all the guard training. And so when he rides back to the, you know, the Shire, like everybody's like, ooh.
You know, another character, a main character from a book who gets too much spinach is Prince Samith from Lyriel. It's been a while since I remember this, largely because I put him on my list of characters with too much spinach, which I just looked up.
But while we were podcasting, for shame.
Yeah.
For shame.
Here's the big reason why Samith has too much spinach, is because at the beginning, he gets a good dose of spinach when he's like, because he, you know, he knows magic and he's pretty cocky. And at the beginning, like an evil undead shows up and like attacks his school. And he's like, I'm going to fight this thing. And he like rolls up to fight it and gets his butt kicked and is like scarred. And that's a really good way for the character to be introduced, right? Because now he has like personal beef with this undead thing and like a motivation to like overcome his humiliation and like get better. Right? Mm-hmm. That's a really strong motivation. And he doesn't. because like the rest of the book is him like questioning, it's like, is this, you know, people say it's my destiny to become the, you know, to like become the next it's called the Abhorson, but like, you know, the next anti-undead guy, like, is a really important job, and like people say it's my job, but like I lost to this undead, but like I have to work harder to get there. And then at the end it just finds out no, it was actually someone else's destiny and I just suck. is what happens at the end. And like, you know, this could have been cool. It could have been a cool subversion if he had like discovered he had some other destiny.
Well, they kind of give him one, but it's very like it's very underdeveloped. It's very kind of casual, like, oh, and by the way, you're also this thing. Okay, good. Now go.
Yeah,
over
by
here.
The way, you're descended from this builder guy, and it like means nothing and literally never comes up in an important story manner. But yeah, he spends most of the book, like, you know, failing at stuff and getting mocked by the sarcastic animal companion that he has. Interestingly enough, this book has two sarcastic animal companions, and it turns out that is one too many sarcastic animal companions. You only need one. Two is too many.
Yeah, no, he never really feels like he actually came into his own. And I think that's, again, one of the reasons why I think it's much better in most cases for a story to have one primary important character, not to have multiple of equal importance. It was because more often than not, I think the writer just likes one of them better. Mm-hmm. And
oh yeah, absolutely.
And one of them just ends up being better and getting more focus and just being, you know, and the other one. And definitely I feel like this was a case here with Samus and Liriel, where Liriel was clearly the writer's favorite.
I cannot figure out why Samoth is even in this book, except, like, okay, the only reason I can think of that Samoth even needs to be in this book is that the author, like, felt it was important to have the child of the previous protagonist to be in the story. Mm. That's the only reason I can think of. And, like, I think it's even revealed later that Liriel is also, like, related to the protagonist. I think, yep, it's, like, her younger sister is what it's revealed to be. Mm-hmm. But at the beginning, it's, like, Samoth, really the only purpose he serves is, and it's not even a real story purpose, it's a meta purpose, is to remind us that the previous book's protagonist exists. Because, like, she's his kid. Mm-hmm. Or he's her kid, excuse me.
Yeah.
We have gone over our time. Too much candy and spinach. Alright, I'm gonna go be sick because I had all this candy. Wes, you are now healthier, but you also have no joy in life.
I know, just raw spinach. I'm not even gonna try to cook it.
Yeah. No, my God. Okay. All right. So, thank you everyone for listening. If anything we said piqued your interest, you can leave a comment on our website at mythgrants.com. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
If you're stuck on your next draft, we'd love to help. We offer consulting and editing services on mythgrants.com. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale, and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean, and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea.
This has been the Mythgreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Coulton.